All right, guys, welcome to the call. This is Ryan McGinn with MuscleGainingExperts.com, and I'm here with fitness expert Alan Cosgrove. And we're going to be going over all kinds of muscle building tips for you today. So, Alan, first off, thanks for coming on the call, man. I appreciate taking time out of your day and doing this for us.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to help.
Awesome. I jump right into it, you know. Give us a little bit about your background and how you got started, you know, training and, you know, how you came into the fitness world pretty much.
I was a competitive martial artist. I got my first black belt when I was about 14, 15 years old. And from then I started really, I really enjoyed competitive fighting, and I did kickboxing, taekwondo, I did different styles. I'd have totally have had the UFC been around then, sort of late 80s, early 90s, in the way that it is now. I think that's the career path I'd have chosen. But I studied a lot of training just to give me an edge, and really that idea of trying to get an edge and study more took me to college, and I started studying sports science there, and it took me to weightlifting certifications and bodybuilding courses because one of my goals was, a lot of people don't know this, but I won national titles at five different weight classes. So I did a lot of things to gain weight just to seek out a challenge for bigger guys. From there, I finished college, and there was no real money-making in competitive martial arts, really. It's certainly not in kickboxing, which I was really pursuing at the time. It's a little different now. So I became a trainer. I worked at a club. I went independent, and now I have a facility out in Southern California where I have about 12 staff working full-time with me.
Awesome. So was that a pretty quick process for you? Did that take a long time, or was that, you know, just years and years to work there?
Yeah, I think I first went to college in 89, and I was training people then, not very well. And we actually opened my gym in 2000. So it was about 10 years from studying till I was actually in business, and we've been open for just coming up for almost 10 years right now. So it was like anything else, at the time, I think I was in the UK, I was the second ever graduating class in sports science. So when you look back, people studied like becoming a phys ed teacher, or they studied physical therapy or something. So it really was a young field. Organizations like, you know, even when I started over here in the US, organizations like Perform Better and Elite Fitness and stuff, these organizations didn't exist. So the only way to get more training information was either in the trenches and talking to guys at gyms, or taking like different certifications with various organizations. So when I look back, it's a fast process, but when I was going through it, it just seemed like a really slow. I mean, now I've mentioned this in a blog post recently, that when I started off, I did my thesis in 92 on creatine supplementation. In order to find out anything about creatine, you had to go to the library and find the journal article that talked about it, and get the actual article and read it, and then print it out. Nowadays, you could put, I'll do it right now. If you put creatine monohydrate into Google, there are 539,000 hits for it right now. You couldn't read that in your lifetime. And by the time you get through the first maybe 200, there's probably another 1,000 made up. So right now it's easy to get more information. The hardest thing now is to try to filter that information into something that's actually meaningful. In the past, it was trying to find things out was difficult. I remember finding it was actually in my college library, I found something written by Louis Simmons, I think, in a Powerlifting USA. I thought I'd found like the scrolls, like the sacred, you know, scrolls. I was just like, here's a guy who's applying some sort of science and interpretation of the stuff coming out of Russia to real people. He may have been the first guy to really influence me that much.
Awesome. So over those last 10 years, I'm sure, how many clients do you think you've actually trained in that time period?
I don't know. Right now at the gym, we have just over 200 clients, I think, or just around about that number. And they come in maybe three times a week. So we see 600 workouts on average per week, and we record everything in our gym. So if you do that over the course of the last 9 years just at our gym, you know, you're seeing about 600 workouts a week, and we're open every week. So it's like, you know, 31,000 workouts a year. Multiply that by close to 10 years, and we have a lot of information there. Like, it's so I'm always looking at a, you'll look at a research study and they'll say, hey, we put 8 guys on a program. And I'm like, well, that's interesting, but I've got like 25 people on any program at any one time at my gym, and we track it just as well. So we've seen a lot of people. I said something that this morning, I was talking to someone, and we were talking about like the traditional professional bodybuilder program. And I said that it's like being a dentist, right? For everything that you've ever read scientifically says that brushing and flossing is the key for dental and periodontic health. And all your friends who have successful practices, and I mean working with real people, have they're all saying the same thing. And everything that you've seen says brushing and flossing seems to make the most sense. But there's a group of people who've never brushed their teeth in their lives and don't have tooth decay. We don't study those guys to find out what everybody else should do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking, and their argument is usually, well, my teeth are better than yours. But if you look at most people, we have something that seems to work 99% of the time for 99% of the people. That's where I put my focus. And we see that a lot in our facility. We see things that work over and over again. So we sort of you can't not notice it if you're just immersed in it, you know?
Yeah. You see things over and over every day.
Yeah, you keep seeing them. So it's just, you can't, it's anybody who, I always said that if I went and, you know, was in Louis Simmons' shoes and I saw all these things and I saw guys getting stronger, you know, I think I'd come to the same conclusion as he did over time. If I worked at a physical therapist office and I kept seeing things over and over. But a lot of people are making decisions based on, you know, a bodybuilding magazine that they read once, right, instead of looking at the massive amount of material out there. So it's one of the smarter things I've done, is just writing things down all the time and recording data that's going on.
So you probably say one of the most important things for people to succeed would be keeping a training journal or a log of their workouts?
Yeah, your own experience is the biggest factor in this. I've been lucky that I had my own experience plus another 600 workouts a week I could look at. Like most people, you know, most people don't do 600 workouts a year, right? So in 1 week I see a lot of information. But I think that when I was a trainer, I used to write down a 100-word summary of every workout that I took a client through. And I would just say, hey, you know, that the poundage on the Romanian deadlift is going up. Here's what we've done. And here's the cues I use to explain the form. And over a while, you start just having you can't remember everything, right? When you go to a seminar and you attend and you don't write anything down, you're not going to remember it all. So it's a way of just looking back and going, right, what did I do the last time that my squat poundage got stuck? Oh, I worked on bringing up my core and my lower back strength. Well, let me do that again just in case that's limiting me, because you see a lot of information like that. So a training journal is really key, but maybe as much as the journal of your sets and reps, write down things that you're noticing and you know, things that people are telling you, and just, you know, keep a track of it and experiment and see what's happening.
Awesome. That's a huge tip right there. I know once I started writing my workouts down, actually even more after talking to you at the Elite seminar not too long ago. You know,
well, I had a guy at the Elite seminar, and he told me he had shoulder pain. And I'm like, all right, I did a couple of things to see what was causing it. And I said, right, what are you doing now to try to get over it? And he's like, I'm not doing anything. I'm like, dude, fucking try something. Like, try something, track it, and see if it works. Because there's only going to be 3 findings. 1, it made it better, in which case we know what to do. 2, it made it worse, in which case we know what to do, we just do the opposite. Or 3, it had no effect. Well, doing nothing has had no effect, so we're just being in the same boat, so it's still worth a try. And a lot of what we do what scientists do is that's what you're doing. You come up with an idea of something that might work. You test it, and you compare it to doing nothing, or you compare it to doing something else, and you see if it works better or worse. And that's all. You, that's that's really, you can do your own research with that if you just track all things you're doing. And I remember saying to you, is that what's the weakest point in your race? And let's look at that and break down what we could do that to enhance that part of the race. Now, that may have no effect. It may make you worse. It may make you better. But we're having some sort of a plan of attack to try to get forward.
Definitely. And that actually helped me a ton in my BMX racing career.
Very cool.
One thing, I know you're speaking a lot about Louis Simmons, but who else has kind of molded your philosophies, or kind of go into like your philosophies? I know you studied with Paul Cech and
I've been through the mill. It was a lot. My taekwondo instructor was always very open to looking at other things when I first started. He was like, he'd come in with like a drill he would get from talking to track coaches or a strengthening program he got from a rugby team, and he was never. So he really helped with my philosophy, is to not, you know, pick a team, to look at everything that's working well and people that are doing a good job and learn from anyone. So he's probably the first big influence. I worked for a physical therapist in New York called Gary Guerrero, who had a real sort of aggressive approach to rehab and training that shaped a lot of my ideas. Poliquin, Czech, Ian King, all the elite guys, Mike Boyle, Gray Cook, a lot of the guys on the Perform Better Tour now, the Pavel, Anthony DeLulio, Jason Brown, Josh Henkin, all, like, I just, it's hard to pick one, because I'm lucky enough to get exposed to a lot of different people, like Rob Rogers, an NSCA guy who's with USC for a while. He's one of maybe the most successful strength coaches of all time. Locally, Robert Dos Remedios. And I just see what these guys are doing. And the key thing is, all these people are authentic. They're telling you stuff that they truly believe. So it's not for me to debate them. Like, one of my things is, people will try to sell you stuff, and they may tell you stuff that's not true. None of these guys ever did. They told me like real, what they really believed, and I saw a lot of that, and I was able to take it on board and sharing ideas with, you know, Joe DeFranco, Jay Ferrugia, guys like that. I just had a lot of influences. It would be really hard to narrow it down. I'm one of the few people, I think, that I've, anybody you want to mention, I probably have everything they've ever published. Like, I have a huge library of stuff. My joke is, if we ever have to go head to head with an athlete, I know what you're going to do, because I've seen everything you've ever published. Like, I've studied you, and I know what you're going to do. So I already know your approach is going to be. So if my athlete has to beat you, I just have to find the weak links in your philosophy and try to exploit them. And it's just a good attitude to have, is I'm not trying to see what's wrong with anyone's philosophy. I look at their strengths, and just by nature, I try to find other things. So learn from a lot of guys. Just the key thing is, it's, I don't think you can, a lot of guys try to pick a team and they want to be, I'm a powerlifting guy or I'm a kettlebell guy. And I just don't really understand that philosophy. There's kettlebell guys getting people in great shape. There's Olympic lifting guys getting it done. There's guys in the NSCA, you know, collegiate strength coaches, the Collegiate Strength and Conditioning Association doing good stuff. Joe Cairns has published some great work. Look at it, what anybody who's doing it well does. To me, it's like the old martial arts days where you tried to establish whether jiu-jitsu was superior to boxing and so on. And what we found is that nothing was real superior. That maybe in the beginning it was jiu-jitsu, because no one knew how to fight off their back. And then as guys started to understand that, it seemed to go into the wrestlers were better. And the Greco-Roman wrestlers seemed to be good with their ground and pound. And then guys like Maurice Smith and stuff started to understand takedown defense and were knocking guys out. Now you don't even talk about what style these guys are. They just talk about they have good stand-up or a good ground game. You know, that BJ Penn is a black belt in jiu-jitsu, but he's known for you know, having good hands and good stand-up. You know, George St. Pierre is the same. Like, Lyoto Machida is a black belt in a very traditional style of karate, Shotokan, but he's able to embrace it in the in Ultimate Fighting because he's got a good knowledge of jiu-jitsu and Thai boxing. So I think that Ultimate Fighting is a good example of how we have to look at training. That you can't choose to pick a team and ignore other stuff that's good. And that's the reality. Everybody has something to offer, and if you ignore anything and you had to go into an ultimate training situation, you have to get someone ready. You have to embrace everything. You know, even like you have to understand CrossFit, you have to understand endurance training, you have to understand it all. But it's essentially I use a mixed martial arts analogy a lot, is that you would no longer try to compete at MMA just knowing jiu-jitsu or just knowing boxing. Like, you'd get killed because there's too many holes in your game. And that's the reality of what we're doing, is people are trying to look at the holes in their game. Instead of looking at the holes in the game, they're trying to just pick one philosophy. I don't think you need to do that.
Awesome. That's huge. I mean, with all those different styles that you studied, I mean, I know you kind of believe in more of a well-balanced athlete. I know when I was doing a little bit of your program, it was all, you know, I did the mobility, I did a lot of explosive lifts, complexes. I mean, can you give us an outline of, like, what your average client would go through?
Yeah, let's say look at a guy throwing a punch, right, and you start breaking down what a punch is. Well, he has to have some sort of mobility around the joint because you always pull back, right, to get more force. Same as, you know, before you jump, you go the opposite direction before you jump. You get that mobility and that stretch shortening cycle. So an average workout in our place is client comes in and we go through a mobility and movement prep where we're looking at not just stretching, like actual, you know, it might be lunging and twisting. There may be some static work there, but it's a very dynamic warm-up with some plyometrics in. And each joint is warmed up differently. Like, the ankle requires mobility, so you have to get it mobile before you train, whereas the knee requires stability, right? And so you'd have to look at the quads and hamstrings to stabilize the knee and switch them on. So we start with a mobility and movement prep section, and then we move into what we call a prehabilitation, which is really just one of my staff, Mike Winch, said something to me this morning, that we're looking to mobilize the thoracic spine, stabilize the scapula, you know, and really switch on the glutes. That really sums up the problem areas for people, as hips and lower back and the sort of shoulder area. So we look at those areas as a sort of injury prevention or bulletproofing them. Then we move into sort of a speed and explosiveness section or elasticity. And direct, we always train the core directly. There's just too much evidence showing that people need to train the core and get it strong and get it stable, that I don't think you're going to do it just by doing squats. I mean, if you could, then the West Side guys and the elite guys would never do another assistance exercise. You just work on that prime exercise because it would take care of everything. Well, it doesn't. These guys train abs and lower back, so, you know, they're much stronger than us, so we should always look at that. Then our resistance training section, which is more like traditional strength training, and then everybody does some type of, we call it energy system development, which is a term I got from Mark Verstegen from Athletes Performance, who stands for ESD, and he calls it